Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. She was a pioneer for women in media, not just in South Dakota, but in the nation. Today, we hear the story of Helen Duhamel from her granddaughter, Helene Duhamel. And Helene joins us now from SDPB's Black Hills Bureau in downtown Rapid City. Helene, welcome to the program. Thanks for stopping by.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship with your grandmother. Did you know her?
Yes.
Okay, how old were you when she died?
Well, she died in... Oh, I'm trying to find all my age. But I was married working at KOTA. I had a daughter that was just a year old. And so, you know, I knew her. I had a relationship with her. We had spaghetti dinner every Sunday. So we saw a lot of her. And, of course, I was to some degree following in her footsteps at KOTA.
And give me an idea for our folks who are just... You know, how far back does her story go? We're going back to, you know, South Dakota in the 40s, right?
Yeah. Let me just give you a little bit of information, a little bit of history on her. So I was born in 1962, but in 1961, she was elected president of the South Dakota Broadcasters Association. That was the first woman to be elected president of any state broadcast association. And so to me, and whenever you asked her how she did it, she would always say, it took guts. And I believe that's really what it took in a man's world. So she was born Helen Seidel Duhamel. Her surname was Seidel. November 26, 1904, in Windsor, Missouri. The family moved to the Panhandle area. She was raised on a ranch on the White River, just north of Chadron. Her parents divorced, kind of odd for that time. And during high school, she and her mother moved to Rapid City and ran a boarding house, which is where our YMCA now stands on Kansas City Street. She went to lots of different schools, including St. Martin's Academy in Sturgis, but she ended up graduating from Rapid City High School in 1922. And that was her last formal education.
Wow.
So her brothers, her father felt, should go to college, but didn't think she should go to college. And in fact, she asked him for help. She thought he could help. Her mother didn't have the means, and he refused. So she was done after high school. While her brothers were going to college, she was working as a bookkeeper at Swander's Grocery Store, which is on 7th Street north of St. Joe in Rapid City. She was really good at math, good at numbers, and she just continued her education by reading business magazines. So she married Bud Duhamel in 1924, and it always struck me as strange. She's tall like me. I'm close to 6 foot. And Bud Duhamel was shorter. I always thought that was an odd thing, but it worked for 67 years. They had 4 children. So the Duhamel Trading Post, the Duhamel building still stands in downtown Rapid City, sold everything but groceries, hardware, furniture, plumbing services, supplies, Western wear, Levi jeans, Pendleton clothes, blankets, and the famous Duhamel saddles. But when the Depression struck, well, it was the big three, Depression, drought, and the Dirty 30s, that changed everything. It was a turning point in her life. Her father-in-law, so that would be Alec Duhamel, asked if she would help the family from losing the Duhamel Trading Post. So in 1933, she became the bookkeeper of Duhamel Company. The problem the store had, and probably most businesses at the time, is everybody operated on credit. You know, you put it on the tab. Well, at a certain point, customers could no longer pay their bills, and the Duhamel Company had amassed quite a debt. I'm told the store wrote off over $500,000 in credit debts in 1933, which was a lot of money even now, but then it was really damaging. So the company was in technical default. It couldn't make mortgage payments. So when she took over, the first thing she did was abolish credit. She transformed the first floor of the Duhamel building on 518 St. Joe Street into what you see today, which is a bunch of little stores. And she sublet all the departments to the managers. So all those storefront stores opened, and with the rent, she was able to make at least partial payments to the bank, which was more than most businesses were doing. So she saved the business from bankruptcy, which was kind of interesting. But what she also realized in pulling the business out of bankruptcy was that advertising was a really critical thing. So she bought into, once the business was, you know, out of danger, she bought into a local radio station, Call of the Black Hills, K-O-B-H, mm-hmm. that came into existence in 1936. And it was starting to lose money by 1953. So she was one of the stockholders, and they intended to sell that radio station to an investor in Chicago. And I was told that she paid $50,000 more than the offer on the table to keep local ownership of Rapid City's only radio station. And by then, wow. the call letters were KOTA, as in Dakota, KOTA, the golden call letters that remain today. So she bought all of the radio station in 1953. And about the mid-50s, the story goes, and she would say this, that, you know, that Rapid City's city fathers, and they were all men but her, all businessmen, they gathered to discuss this bad thing that was coming to, well, the whole nation. Helen was the only female in the meeting. It was at the Elks building, in the old Elks Theater building. And we had to figure out a way to keep this terrible thing out of Rapid City. You might guess, television. So Helen apparently decided that this thing must be pretty good if they wanted to keep it out. So she went to Washington, D.C. in roughly in 1954 and filed for a television license. And it would be the first in western South Dakota. It was the second in the state of South Dakota. Kella went on the air in 1953. So KOTA didn't go on the air until July 1st of 1955. And then over the next 25 years, she expanded KOTA territory. So one of the first things she did was to get television into the panhandle of Nebraska. She talked about the loneliness of a ranch and nothing to do in the cold and dark nights. So she worked with the locals down there in Nebraska. Locals could invest in debentures or notes to try to finance television in the northern panhandle. Because I've always said there's more cows than people that you're talking to in right. much of this area. But so KDUH, with a D-U-H as in Duhamel, went on the air March 1958 in Hay Springs, Nebraska. And eventually it was moved to Scotts Bluff, Nebraska in 1970, and a big 2,000-foot tower in Hemingford. Leeds, South Dakota, that went on the air in November 1966 with her initials, K-H-S-D, Helen S. Duhamel, Helen Seidel Duhamel. And then she put a station on the air in Sheridan, Wyoming, in October of 1977. That would be KSGW, Sheridan, Gillette, Wyoming. And then she actually got into cable. Television is line of sight. And with mm-hmm. the Black Hills, that was a problem around here. So in 1966, she partnered with Joe Floyd, again of Kello fame, became equal partners in South Dakota Cable, and brought cable television to Belfouche, Hot Springs, Custer, Sturgis, Spearfish, Central City, and reworked the Lee Deadwood cable system. So that's kind of the history of broadcasting at that time. What's interesting to me is, you know, she was really into the business of broadcasting, and my grandfather was, and his mother, my great-grandma Mamie, were running Sitting Bull Crystal Caverns at the time, which was famous and different in a different way, but Grandma Helen was more like wearing the pants in the family. Kind of, you know.
And she is making those, as you said, really difficult decisions that maybe upset a lot of people, from, you know, people who wanted to keep TV out and she goes to bring it in, to people who probably said, you can't get rid of credit at the Trading Post. No one will come in. This is how we've done business for how long. And she just keeps making these, you know, these hard choices. Is it because she has this vision that is just one step ahead of everyone else? Is it because she's so self-educated? What, you know, having known her growing up, what do you know about her personality that would say, yeah, she was totally poised to make the tough calls?
Well, when you don't have a college education and you believe you need one, I think you do have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and you work hard to educate yourself. And she did. I mean, the periodicals and the magazines that she read were amazing. So I'm sure she was keeping up on trends. She was really, literally, the only woman maybe in business at that stature at the time. So she stuck out like a sore thumb. In many ways, she was tall. She was always dyeing her hair different colors. Fiery, kind of foul-mouthed. She wasn't intimidated by men. maybe a product of the time, but you know, she was, you know, she could keep up with drinking and smoking right along with the best of them. She wasn't one of those warm, fuzzy grandmas. That was a good. That was a good cook. Right. That came to all my plays and stuff. No, no, no. That wasn't her at all. She was a business person, and she told you exactly what she thought all the time. And I think there were certainly people probably that didn't like her, but I don't think there were many people that didn't respect her.
Mm. Did you really feel like you had a grandma that was, you know, different than maybe some of the traditional, you know, what you might see on television of what grandma looks like? And did you appreciate that right away and sort of say, well, this is an asset that other people don't have?
Yes.
Or did you just want the cookies?
I think I did want the cookies. But I had a grandmother, my mother's mother. Right. The problem is they lived in St. Louis, so we didn't see them a lot. But she was the grandmotherly grandmother, the picture you have in your head. There's no question we knew that things were different with my grandmother, and television was new and exciting and a great business to have at the time. Grandma Helen, she was just all business all the time. Tell you what you think. You know, sometimes you just want them to say something nice that doesn't have anything to do with, you know, whatever. But she would never do that. If you know, she would just say whatever was on her mind. She certainly had vision, no question. Right. She certainly had opportunity. She had this desire to improve herself coming from nothing, you know, as she was willing to take risks, you know, to jump into that radio business and then to dive right into TV. So she was a gambler, she was a pioneer, and she was a really hard worker.
What's her legacy today? And do people, know it? They know her name? Is she a common name? And people are still talking about, that meeting they had with her, or, this is how it looks because of Helen?
Certainly the old-timers, people do remember her. I spoke at the Journey Museum for March Women's History Month a couple of weeks ago, and I asked in the room if people knew her. And it was a little bit older crowd, and about four people raised their hand. I think around here, most people still know of her. The Duhamel family was in broadcasting all these years and continues to have radio at the television station. Sold not once but twice. It was flipped fast, and now KOTA, KEVN are owned by Gray Television. I think most people still kind of know her, but you know, as time goes on, people do lose history a little bit.
Well, let's keep telling that story. Helene, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.